The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
David Cobb is a college basketball and college football writer for CBS Sports. Also a role player here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Monday, Wednesday, Friday with me here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. But Thursday with Jeffrey Wright and company as the company for Jeffrey Wright on X. David W. Cobb. David, how's it going? How was your weekend?
Hey, man. Good weekend. We were moving, as you'll recall, from Friday.
Sure.
But that's gone pretty well. So, it's all good. And, man, we are... 26 days away from week zero in college football? So that's exciting as well.
And we are 3 days away from first preseason game, the Hall of Fame game in the National Football League.
No kidding. Man, it's here, isn't it?
Yeah, I was talking about you last night.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We went to the Creed concert. Your boys, Knox and Hayes, were there. And they say you seriously downplay your golf ability.
Well,
this is what I'm hearing. They say you're an absolute stick, but when I talk to you about it, it doesn't seem like you think that highly of yourself.
Well, you know, actually, Gabe, tell me more about how good they said I am at golf.
They said you're a slight build, but you can bang it off the tee. Good with greens and reg. Decent putter. Yeah. I mean, they say all around game's good for David Cobb, but you downplay it to me.
Well, I'm a bad putter.
Oh,
that's
really?
The
okay.
truth of it.
Okay.
I'm a bad putter, but I'll take it, man. I'm thrilled, and I'm glad somebody got to enjoy Creed. Like how was it? Like was it fantastic?
Connor and I opened the show on it. I mean, it was everything it was cracked up to be and more. I had waited 6 months since I bought the tickets to go see that concert, and the last four songs that they played, Connor, let's see if I can get the order right here. With Arms Wide Open.
Yep.
Higher.
Yep.
One Last Breath.
Yep.
My Sacrifice.
Yes.
In the show. It couldn't have been better. If it didn't live up to my standard and the hype that I had put into my head, I would tell you that it lived up to everything. Scott Stapp still in his prime, tail end of his prime though, but he was great. He was out there. He's all swole up. Daughtry was a good opener as well. I mean, I enjoyed every last second in FedEx Forum last night.
How were your seats?
I was in 107A, so like sort of second deck there. Club level looking seat, but it's not club level.
Man, I'm so jealous. But I'm glad you had a good time. I'm glad you got to see my pals too. I'm just jealous. Like, this is the one time where you actually should have shot a cell phone video of a concert, which I would never recommend otherwise. Just to send it to me to, like, make me jealous.
I have an unreasonable amount of videos in my phone. I can tell you that right now. I mean, by the time they got With Arms Wide Open, that was their fourth to last song, everybody was on their feet. And you know what I will give the most credit for? Because, listen, I know Creed is making, like, that nostalgic comeback, right? Like, people are back into Creed, and it was like Nickelback. People hated on Nickelback and Creed and Stain for a while, but everybody's starting to admit again, okay, that's good music. That's fun music. Part of our childhood, whatever it is. It was full to the rafter. I mean, it was, there was not an empty seat in FedEx Forum last night. That surprised me.
I'm really tempted to make a Penny Hardaway joke right now, but I won't.
Are you gonna trash the home attendance in the American Athletic Conference? Jeez, David,
no,
tough crowd.
That's great. That's great. No,
I'm glad
that,
you weren't a Creed Cobb. I'm glad.
Damn.
Oh,
there was a Penny Hardaway joke to be made, but, you know, I'm glad you stayed away from
it. You don't deserve Creed.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. And I hope the forum is full. Oh, here's the text coming through from Connor. Two images and five videos. So I'll have to dive
check
into
those.
This after we get off the phone.
Yeah, I may have awesome. To send you I'm one not, when I get you off the phone.
I'm going to be honest. I only got one of their true songs in those videos because I was levitating and didn't have control of my hands during during the Final Four. So, Cop, the only one that I think that it's a hit that I took a video of for because I took them for some of my friends that weren't able to make it. I think that Arms Wide Open is in those videos. The higher
I have one last breath
and My Sacrifice are not in those.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, still, the fact that they played all the greatest hits, I love it. I love what you said, too, about, you know, it's like the music of our youth. Our generation is now, like, old enough to pay to go to concerts and is, like, self-confident enough now to, like, yeah, you know.
I like what I like, right? I don't have to be shamed into not liking Creed or not liking Nickelback or not liking some of those bands.
Now, you know, I might push back on Nickelback a little bit.
Okay, that's fine.
But I'm there with Creed. And you know what? I hope the Forum is full many, many more times, specifically for basketball games of the Memphis Tigers variety in the months ahead.
Well, maybe we won't see that until some form of conference realignment with the Memphis Tigers, though. Because Conference, they did. It was last week they announced the teams they have two meetings with, the teams they only have home, the teams they only have road with. And I hated getting that announcement last week because on the heels of the Big 12 denial, it just made it worse. I mean, UAB, Florida Atlantic, North Texas, South Florida. I was debating, Connor and I debated, like, what will be the biggest crowd in FedEx Forum next year for Penny Hardaway and for that basketball team, and I don't have a good guess. I guess South Florida.
I think a couple of the – okay, specifically within the conference, but – they've got a couple of
non-conference. I'm talking conference though. Like, what's the draw anymore? Like, what's the biggest draw? At least there's no real draw. But what's the biggest? Is it UAB still? They weren't very good last year. No Yoxel anymore.
That's the one. Like, as somebody who grew up following Memphis sports in the late '90s and early 2000s, like, yeah, I mean, UAB still moves in the. But the thing is, UAB has to be good for it to matter. They're not a big enough rival to where if they're bad, people are still going to, like, really want to go to that game. If UAB is good, then I think it makes it more interesting. But, I mean, they lost Yaxel, and I don't think they're going to be very good. You mentioned Tulane. I don't know if you saw a horrible, horrible story out of Tulane.
Yeah,
today.
I saw that.
Better, awful, awful.
Greg Glenn III. Rest in peace.
Yeah, Greg Glenn, excuse me. Yeah, tragic accident. He passes away. I mean, it just feels like this league can't catch a break. And I understand why Memphis is trying to leave it. Don't get me wrong, but goodness, like at some point, something's got to break the Americans way. Maybe South Florida and the energy they're going to bring and sort of I think Brian Hodgson's going to be really good for the conference. He's a young up and coming coach from the Nate Oates tree. Came in here with Arkansas State, beat Memphis last year, yada, yada. I think he could really bring some energy to the league in a good way. And then I'm a little bit skeptical, but also maybe, like, I guess, optimistic for what UTSA could be under Austin Clonch. Like, I don't know that, like, he's got my full, like, vote of confidence as a rising star, per se, or what have you. But I think he's somebody that could breathe some life into that program. Again, though, like, we're kind of having to prop up the scraps here a little bit I mean, that's really what this conference is, especially a program like a UTSA. But I am a believer in South Florida. I think they're going to be pretty decent. And, you know, honestly, I thought Tulane might be all right. too. But
I hate
tragedy.
To ask that question, though. You know, I don't want to be rude or anything like that. And obviously, I know the mentality. You know, when you lose a player on the eve of the season, like, that's just brutal in itself. But, like, how much on the floor does the Greg Glenn news, like, how much does that change the calculus for Tulane, who was thought of as probably one of the two best teams in this conference? Like, that's
right.
Something I know that there's more important things, very clearly, after you lose Greg Glenn. But that changes the outlook on that team completely. Completely.
Oh, it absolutely does. I mean, he was a really good player, a guy that was a highly touted prospect. I believe he started at Michigan and was just a great keep, like a great retention for Tulane and for the American, because he's a double-figure guy with some versatility in his game. And one of the reasons why I looked at Tulane and thought, okay, like, they could be there with Memphis, and they could be there with South Florida at the top of the conference this coming season. And then you just throw in the emotional just horror of losing somebody who's been a part of your program too. You know, it's not like he was transferring in or they didn't even know him yet. You know, this is a guy that has been a part of their program, that's been with Ron Hunter, that has been with several of those other guys who were coming back at Tulane, and it looked like they had a really good nucleus. And just to see a young life snuffed out in an instant during an accident, it's just awful. And it's a year after, you know, South Florida lost their coach.
It's been brutal news in the preseason and the later offseason for the American in basketball. Amir Abdul-Rahim last year, Greg Lynn this year.
I know. Yeah, it's awful. I mean, I just feel terrible for, you know, his family, obviously, and then for that program. You want to go into a new season with momentum and with excitement, and not with sorrow and with grief, and obviously that's what Tulane is now having to deal with. And it's so hard when, you know, Gabe, you played college sports at a high level. The bond that you forge at practice and on the team trips and in the fires of competition, that's unique. I mean, those, you know, I never played even remotely close to the college level, but yet still some of my best friendships are friendships that I made playing sports, because the experiences that you go through, you know, and now for these guys who are part of that program, and they do have a lot back relative to most teams in the American, you know, they've got to go into this season, you know, without that. And it's not like he transferred, right? Like he's gone, you know, and that's just a really difficult thing to deal with.
Listen, pseudo rival in the American for years, mostly in football, I think, but basketball, they've had their back and forths. But rooting for that Tulane team this year, truly.
Yeah.
Truly. Never want to see anything like that happen. All right, now, I forgive me for asking this in the most corny possible way, but I want to get to some college football. I know this is a large-scale question and a question that everyone asks, so it's like a repeat. But who is the team to beat in college football, in your humble opinion, David?
I don't think there is one, Gabe. I think that's what makes this upcoming season so exciting. You go and look at the national title odds, you're not going to find anyone with better odds than plus 500. And I think that makes this season unique, because so many of the top dogs have questions to answer, particularly at quarterback. Look at Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, three teams that you would typically expect to be at the top of the odd sheet to win the national title. They're all in the neighborhood, but they all have big questions to answer at quarterback. The programs that have certainty at quarterback, like Clemson, Penn State, LSU, you don't feel maybe as good about where they've been the last few years. You have questions about other parts of their roster or questions about their coach. You know, so it's an interesting dynamic right now where you've got seven or eight teams that feel like they could be the team to beat. And that's the one thing I love about the way this season is shaping up, is that there isn't that clear-cut favorite like there was going into last year with Ohio State. And ultimately that came to fruition. The team that we all thought was the best going into the year, well, yep, they were the best. And so I don't know. that's the beauty of this year.
The team that I am really – obviously Penn State, you know, I have my love affair with them. But the other team I'm looking at very closely, it's one of those teams you brought up with an established quarterback, but Clemson. Because now this year, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on all of this, feels like they have real pass catchers, right? Like it feels like Antonio Williams is a guy that you can rely on. Bryant Wesco Jr., like him. Offensive line's decently taken care of. They're going to have to deal with the running back position. But then defensively, they're always good. Peter Woods may be the best prospect, not named Caleb Downs, for next year's draft, NFL draft. Like, it feels like that team is primed and ready to take a real step. They've been building to this with Cade Klubnik. It feels like this is the most realistic opportunity they have to win a natty.
Yeah, they're going to be cream of the crop in the ACC, no doubt. I mean, that's kind of always been the case, though, even during their, quote, down years under Dabo. I mean, they've still kind of been the dean of the ACC. The only issue, I guess, with Clemson, because I agree, like their top end on both sides of the ball is really, really good. But for example, like if you were to go look at Bud Elliott's blue chip ratio that came out last week or within the last couple of weeks, they're just a little bit too far down that list to feel super confident in their depth. And so that's a little bit of a concern. If they were to have a bad run with injuries, I don't know that they would be as well equipped to deal with that as a Ohio State or an Alabama or a Georgia, because Dabo gets his fair share of four stars, a handful of five stars, but he rounds that roster out with some guys who other programs would look at as projects. And he keeps them and he tries to develop them, and some of them hit and some of them don't. But then you get to a point in October, November where, and especially now when you think about having to win three or four games to get through the playoff, where that depth could really be a concern. So that's my one issue with Clemson is I don't know that they have the reinforcements available if things were to go awry with health. So they've got to have a clean bill of health. If they do, they're right there. That's obviously, you know, just something you can't control, and that's my biggest question with Clemson.
Outside of Clemson and the ACC, like, who is in that? Obviously, they're tier one. Who's in that second tier, truthfully? Because you look at SMU. SMU was good last year. You have Kevin Jennings coming back. You have Rhett Lashley, I believe, in that team. But whenever they played anybody with a pulse last year, they seemed to lose, right? BYU, yeah, Clemson, yeah. In the college football playoff as well. Syracuse, no more Kyle McCord. So what are they going to look like? Miami, we can sit here and talk about Carson Beck and his step back into, you know, NFL draft stardom. Maybe he can do that with Miami, but there's no way to paint it other than they're taking a step back at the quarterback position. Cam Ward was better and is actively better than Carson Beck. Florida State was 2-10 last year, but Thomas Castellanos talking a big game. Like, who is in that, like, second tier that you think can actually push Clemson in the ACC this year?
Well, yeah, I'm not a huge believer in SMU. The reasons you mentioned, I'm not a huge believer in Miami because, yeah, Mario Cristobal is a great recruiter. I've never seen anything that tells me he's a great in-game coach, though. And so you kind of got to go down the list before you get to the next team that I really kind of like, which is Louisville. You talk about Jeff Brohm having been there long enough to really establish his program. I think I love the quarterback addition with Miller Moss, who was good at USC. Got injured, and then they wanted to go another direction with a younger player in Jaden Maiava. But, I mean, look at the success that Tyler Shough had in that offense last year as a guy who a lot of people had discarded. I mean, he had been at Oregon and Texas Tech, and everybody kind of thought he was done and he was washed up. And now all of a sudden we're talking about him getting first-team reps in an NFL camp as a rookie. So I think the pairing of a Miller Moss with a Jeff Brohm at Louisville could be really, really nice. And, you know, I think they've got enough around him to where, like, they can actually hang in games where they go up against a strong defense, because I think they're decent defensively as well. So Louisville's kind of like my sneaky dark horse out of the ACC. I mean, you think about how good Jeff Brohm was at Purdue, and we've seen now in the years since he left kind of where that program is at. It's not very pretty. Barry Odom's going to go there and see what he can do, right? But to even get back to the Jeff Brohm trajectory at Purdue is going to take a mountain of a rebuild there at Purdue. And so you go to a place like Louisville where you do have some backing, you do have some investment. It's an easier league than the Big Ten. I think Louisville is primed to win 10 games, be in the mix for a conference title, and potentially even challenge Clemson. So I think I like the Cardinals better than I like, honestly, most of the rest of the teams that other people would tell you are the top contenders.
And then there's Duke with Darian Mensa, $3 million man. Can't forget about them. They were 9-4 last year, a sneaky 9-4, even with Malik Murphy at quarterback. I think they improved at that position if Darian Mensa can take that step up, even with the step up in competition. North Carolina, Bill Belichick, a little bit of a dark horse. We'll see how that works out. Florida State, I know this is a big inflection point for Mike Norvell's career there. Do you think Thomas Castellanos and the cast of characters they have surrounded him with can take that step in the right direction? Hard to go anywhere but up from 2-10 at Florida State. But is this going to be a year, because we know that this is, you know, the Norvell hot seat rumors and conversations start to heat up, no pun intended. Is this a year where they can step back up to that 8-win sort of threshold and be a contender in the ACC?
I have my doubts. I really don't. I'm not a big believer in the Gus Malzahn offensive coordinator hire. I'm not a huge believer in Thomas Castellanos at quarterback. I think their peak years were largely attributable to Jordan Travis at quarterback. And Thomas Castellanos has a little bit more of the Jordan Travis mobility in his game, certainly than DJ Uiagalelei did last season. But I don't know that I trust Gus Malzahn in the year 2025 to be the guy sure. pulling the strings offensively. I mean, can you help me make sense of that hire?
Well, because I can make sense for like the relationship part of it. Like I know Gus Malzahn would be, you know, when Mike Norvell was at Memphis, when I was there, Gus Malzahn would show up in the summer and say, "What's up?" Like they have been friends for a long time. I think Mike Norvell looks up to Gus as one of his sort of better teachers, you know, getting to the point he's at today. So that's where it makes sense. I also, you know, you may not believe in the actual player of Thomas Castellanos or the coach, Gus Malzahn. But we do know that Gus Malzahn's most successful years, whether it be offensive coordinator or as a head coach, came with a guy with a similar skill set in Nick Marshall at Auburn, right? Where it's like he's going to run some of those RPO concepts, read option concepts, use his legs a little bit more. We know Gus Malzahn likes that type of guy. I don't know if Thomas Castellanos has the talent, right? But at the same time, I guess I'm pushing back at your sort of assessment. I think that if there was a match for Gus Malzahn at quarterback, I think Thomas Castellanos is pretty close to sort of what you would look for.
I could see that potentially working. I just don't believe that Gus is as innovative anymore as he was 15 years. I agree. Like, he's closer to the Nick Marshall mold than, honestly, the quarterbacks that Gus had at UCF.
Yep.
Certainly more so than DJU was a year ago. I just don't know that in this day and time, like, he's got the schematic answers that he once did. I think the book is kind of out on what Gus likes to do. And it's one of those situations where Mike Norvell has been so good as an offensive mastermind during his own career that now you got two cooks in the kitchen. And when things start to go wrong in the third quarter against Alabama in week one, you know, right. what direction are we headed with this thing? I don't know. And then you look at the schedule and you got Alabama and Florida on there. Not to mention you go to Clemson, you play Miami as well. So I think there's enough winnable games on their schedule to where they're going to get back to a bowl, and maybe that's enough for Mike Norvell to save his job. But I see a really tough climb to this team being in contention for an ACC title. I just don't think they're going to be top quadrant of the ACC offensively, which is kind of, I think, where they need to be, because I don't know if defensively they're getting back to where they were in 23 when – they got snubbed by the playoff, and, you know, they had Jared Verse on that team and some other NFL guys. And, you know, I don't think that level of talent is there defensively to carry the day if the Malzahn-Castellanos marriage isn't just extremely productive.
Yeah. All right. Now, final thing. Today we learned, probably the biggest story in college football today, but we learned that Deion Sanders, Coach Prime, had bladder cancer. And got his bladder removed, and he is cancer-free now. He did his whole presser today. What was your reaction to that? Kind of insane. He was struggling in the quiet. Didn't tell his sons, didn't tell his team, just wanted to get it out of the way and get back to coaching. The fact that he's going to be on the sideline and plans to be on the sideline this year, that's nothing short of amazing to me.
Yeah, I mean, pretty amazing how close to the vest he was able to hold something so serious. When you talk about a guy who's life is lived in the public spotlight, and he typically, you know, invites that spotlight certainly around his program. In this situation, though, he was dealing with something personal, and man, he kept it close to the vest. And I'm just glad he's okay. Like, it sounds like he's in a really good place moving forward. Obviously, like, he was transparent, like, about the day-to-day challenges he faced and still will face, but to be cancer-free, back to coaching, it's so big for college football. And I thought it was big for Colorado for him to be there with the doctor next to him today to just reassure whoever was watching, prospects, you know, whoever it may be, that, like, all right, like, we got this thing, we're good. Because there was a lot of concern behind the scenes, even leading up to today, about what exactly was going to come out of this and how serious is this going to be? What does it mean for the future of Deion Sanders as a coach and for that Colorado program? But I think nothing but respect for Coach Prime, the way he handled it, and the transparency and aggressiveness and the messaging he put out there about getting yourself checked. And I just hats off to the man, because, you know, it would be easy going through something like that with his sons no longer a part of the program, given all the money and success he's had in his career, to say, you know what, like, it's time for me to take it easy, take a step back.
Yeah. Focus on the main thing.
Yeah, battle through it, and he's back out there. He's going to be coaching his team again, and I mean, we'll see what kind of team they have, but the fact that we're going to get, you know, at least one more year of Deion Sanders as a head football coach in college football, I mean, I think that's huge, and it's a testament to his, I mean, just career and lifelong ability to rise to whatever the challenge may be, football, baseball, track, coaching. You know, he's not perfect, and I know he's polarizing. Some people love him and some people hate him, but I thought the message that we got from Deion Sanders today and what he represents and the interest he's brought to college football, to know that we're going to continue to have that, I think it's great. I think it's great for the game, and I'm just glad he's doing well.
No doubt. Well, David, I appreciate it as always. We'll talk again on Wednesday.
All right, guys. Sounds good. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. He is David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports. Now, this is the time in the show where I remind you to drink Old Dominic. Make sure you go get a bottle of Old Dominic here at a local liquor store today. They have gin, they have vodka, they have toddy, they have whiskey, they have bourbon. Award-winning selections of the whiskey and bourbon in multiple bottles, so get the bottle of your choice. And worth mentioning, they have a brand new, newly released premium vodka that sits in all of those liquor stores today. Charcoal distilling, Memphis aquifer water. It's going to give you all the notes that you love and you have come to love of vodka. So go get that premium vodka today. But, you know, besides drinking Old Dominic, you need to visit Old Dominic. That distillery is beautiful. It's state of the art. You can find them at 305 South Front Street. I would suggest booking a tour and tasting. You got to do it at least once. And if you like it, maybe go back twice or three times. But book a tour and tasting today at olddominic.com. At olddominic.com as well, worth mentioning, ship Old Dominic spirits. Get them as a gift at the holidays for all those extended family members that don't get their hands on a bottle of Old Dominic on the regular. They have karaoke. They have a great event schedule that you can check out at olddominic.com. They just had some music on Saturday, 6 to 9 p.m. So go to olddominic.com, see the next time that they're having some music. If you're just stopping by, if you're having a night on the town, stop by and get a craft cocktail at the bar. That's always fun. And if you have a wedding or a corporate luncheon, they certainly want me to point you in the direction of their space. They have a great event space. Now, what you do is go to olddominic.com and fill out their questionnaire, and they will handle it from there. But it could be a corporate luncheon. It could be dinner. It could be an award ceremony. It could be a wedding reception. Whatever it is, they have a great event space that you will love at Old Dominic. Old Dominic Distillery. Come say hi. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, let's do a trip around the NFL, and we have a lot to discuss, including but not limited to contract extensions and...
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Christian Wilkins kisses. That's on the other side, 92.9 FM ESPN. Back into the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Time to take a trip around the National Football League as we do every single day. Connor, hit it. So the Dallas Cowboys had an interesting weekend. They didn't pay Micah Parsons. That's first and foremost. And while all this was going on, it seems like there's a lot of Cowboys fans that take exception to that. There's a bunch of pay Micah chants at training camp this weekend. But while all that was happening, and Micah still has not put pen to paper on a new contract extension, Jake Ferguson got a deal done. Their tight end, who's been very good for them, 4 years, $52 million. Why are we paying him before we pay Micah Parsons? What are we doing here? That's not good business. It's strange. Doesn't make sense at all. But again, you know, when we talk about the Cowboys and all the Joneses in their front office, it feels like they do a lot of things that don't make sense, including Stephen Jones taking a page out of his dad's book. Over the weekend, when he was asked about Micah Parsons, he said, "We want to pay Micah, but he's got to want to be paid too." Wait, you're talking about the guy who day one of training camp did a 10-minute press availability on the spot when he didn't have to do it and talked about how much he wanted to get paid and how much he thought that the organization was treating him the wrong way. What are you talking about? Every time a Jones opens their mouth, they embarrass themselves. I cannot understand why they keep getting in front of cameras and in front of mics and saying stupid nonsense. Usually Jerry, but Steven, I guess he just had to live up to his dad's good name. What's next? Denver Broncos and wide receiver Cortland Sutton have reached an agreement on a four-year, $92 million extension. He was Bo Nix's favorite target. 81 catches, 1,082 yards, and 8 touchdowns. And he's a guy who's been in the league for a while, but when you have a young quarterback who's going on year 2, and he has shown that he has a liking to a certain wide receiver, you have to go ahead and pay that guy. Keep him on the roster and keep that continuity and that understanding. So this is good business as opposed to what we just got done talking about with the Dallas Cowboys. More good business. Now, this is a big, big, big deal, like monumental deal. And I definitely think it's monumental because it's an offensive lineman being paid, and I always revel in that. But Chargers and left tackle Rashawn Slater agreed over the weekend, I think it was Saturday, on a four-year, $114 million contract extension that includes a record $92 million guaranteed. Now makes him the highest-paid offensive lineman in NFL history. The highest-paid offensive lineman on a per-year basis right now. Christian Darrisaw at number 5, $26 million. Trent Williams at number 4 with $27.5 million. Panay Sewell at $28 million at number 3. Tristan Wirfs, the left tackle for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, at $28.12 million, and now Rashawn Slater leads the pack, $28.5 million. This is good business. I mean, the guy's been in the league since 2021 after being drafted 13 overall by the LA Chargers, and since then he was on the all-rookie team, he was on second-team all-pro 2 years ago, and he's been in the Pro Bowl twice. So this is just what you have to do when you're a coach like Jim Harbaugh, a guy who wants to get that offensive line going, wants to get that run game going, wants to be very tough in the trenches. When we look at that offensive line, keep an eye on them. I know I put the Eagles at the top of the list every single year. As long as Lane Johnson and Jordan Mailata are living, I think they'll be there. But Joe Alt at right tackle, their first-round pick from last year, Rashawn Slater, the highest-paid tackle in NFL history on the other side, that Chargers offensive line is, that's good. That's nasty. That's nasty. But Jim Harbaugh, it's kind of impressive, Connor. He took a team that was terrible on defense and very throw-happy on offense, turned them around in 2 years into tough in the trenches, good defense, that type of football. It's hard to turn around a team that fast, but Jim Harbaugh did it in record time. All right, now I don't necessarily know what to make of the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. That's why I added them to this. I just look at everything that they have at their disposal and all these old players, and I just wanted to bring this up with you, Connor. When we talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers this year, give me a yes or no, an affirmative or a denial on if you think they'll make the playoffs this year.
Oh! Man, I don't know, because I'm weighing Tomlin versus everything. Like, can he get another team to the playoff? Oh man, that's tough. I think that they're gonna miss it.
You think they're gonna miss it? So you would go Ravens, Bengals, Steelers in that order in the AFC North, and all likelihood Browns in last.
Yeah.
But you think they'll be right there, that 9-8, 8-9 cutoff into the playoffs?
Yeah.
I'm curious. I'm going to say yes right now. Before I'm calling my shot here in around the NFL on Monday, July 28th. I think the Aaron Rodgers, as long as Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, which is still a big if, I think the Aaron Rodgers-led Steelers will make the playoffs in 2026.
Okay.
And one of the more bizarre stories that you'll hear probably all year on around the NFL. We know Christian Wilkins, who was signed to a massive $100 million deal last offseason by the Las Vegas Raiders. We know he's been released. Now, most of the release has to do with a foot injury he sustained. It was a Jones fracture that the Raiders with their new regime and Pete Carroll at coach, Geno Smith at quarterback, they felt like he was not rehabbing it the correct way. And they felt like he was taking days off, just did not, you know, after signing that big contract, didn't hold up his end of the bargain. But we got another story as to maybe another reason why he got released. And this is from Adam Schefter. There were a bunch of speculation over the weekend about Christian Wilkins and something that happened within the Raiders locker room. But this is what Adam Schefter said today on the Pat McAfee show. From speaking to people inside the Raiders locker room, they say that Christian Wilkins playfully went to kiss a teammate on the top of the head. They say that player took offense to it, and that's what everybody has been dancing around. So, according to Adam Schefter, one of the other reasons that has been speculated as to why he got released was because he tried to playfully kiss a teammate on the top of his head, and that teammate took exception. Do you think that's the full story? Because I don't think that's the full story.
Probably not.
I could see where a teammate may take exception to that, but I think most people are level-headed enough to know someone's intentions toward them when they do pull a move like that. I would stay away from kissing your teammates on the top of the head, even if it's in a playful manner. But something tells me that this is not the exact story. Now, Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk ended up tweeting today, quote tweeting Adam Schefter, and he said, "This is not the story I heard." So there may be something deeper. I don't know. But this is so bizarre. A guy who made $115 million on the open market, who had a Jones fracture. They said he wasn't rehabbing it properly. But then this extra story comes out. It almost makes me believe that this extra story was probably bigger than the rehab from the foot. You pay someone $115 million, you usually put up with what you have to put up with. But if there's something deeper that happened in that locker room, I think we need to get to the bottom of this. This is strange. This is a very, very strange headline. I don't know how you feel. I did not know.
It was one of the more odd headlines I've read in a while. But when I first saw it, my initial thought was there has to be more to this story. There just has to be.
Right, right. And people are speculating. I'm going to stay away from their type of speculation. A little much. I can just say the picture or the video or the GIF of him doing the splits when he was at Clemson after the national championship win, that has resurfaced. There's been a picture or a video of him, There was a tackle that was made when he was at Clemson, and he put his fingers where they probably should have been. Like, there's been some very, very strange speculation out there, but with a strange story, with a lot to be interpreted, that's what you leave it up for. But that will do it for a trip around the National Football League. One more segment left in the second hour. We'll get to Small Talk when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, another week and another investigation into gambling in Major League Baseball. Cleveland Guardians closer and multiple-time All-Star Emmanuel Clase has been placed on non-disciplinary paid leave as a part of Major League Baseball's sports betting investigation. A month ago, his teammate, Luis Ortiz, who's another pitcher for the Cleveland Guardians, was placed on a similar leave. Now, what is being investigated, I guess, is still up for interpretation. But the way I understand it is they're investigating first pitches for him and balls and strikes, which you can bet on at most major sports books. And what has been found by a lot of people that have been digging into this investigation, trying to figure out what the MLB is going after here and what they're flagging with Luis Ortiz and now Emmanuel Clase of the Cleveland Guardians, They're talking about first pitches and waste pitch percentage. Emmanuel Clase has come into the game at the beginning of the ninth inning 40 times this season. His StatCast waste percentage numbers are very skewed to the first pitch of the ninth inning. First pitch of the ninth inning, he has a 17.5% waste pitch percentage. Every other pitch he has thrown the entire season, besides first pitches of the ninth inning, 5.2% waste percentage. Waste pitch percentage. Easy for me to say. So they're flagging these things. You can bet on balls and strikes, and he's throwing balls in a very convenient time where you can bet to start an inning. Listen, we have a presumption of innocence in most places. When it comes to betting, what I have learned is when someone is sidelined and someone goes into investigation, there is some level of guilt that is there. I don't know what to think about this Emmanuel Clase, Luis Ortiz, Cleveland Guardian story right this second. We need to see more come out. But it is not looking good. And this is a multiple-time All-Star. And a guy who, I mean, has been a star in Major League Baseball for the past, 5 to 7 years. This is a big name that is now being flagged as a part of a betting investigation.
It just feels like every single week that goes by now, we have a new gambling thing that's going on. And it's just unfortunate that we have to talk about this. You know, there may be another reason why he's wasting those first pitches of the ninth inning over and over and over again, but that number, when you look at it on the surface and it is connected to gambling, does make you raise your eyebrows. At the same time, it could also be a reliever coming in the ninth inning and wanting to waste the first pitch to get that first batter to swing at something bad. And, you know, when you watch the replays, he's usually trying to keep the ball low and it bounces a lot of the time. So but that's where it's difficult to tell, you know. But I understand why they're getting flagged. And it's just the way sports and gambling, I think that gambling can be a good thing and it can make sports more exciting. It just feels like, though, we're on the slippery slope of them becoming so intertwined that we're now having to deal with the story like this almost weekly.
You can bet on everything. You can literally bet on everything. My thing is, well, one, Clase has been flagged for only 2 suspicious pitches this entire year. So that's just strange. What this betting firm found that flagged these pitches was, one, they were betting on it being a ball. And 2, there was an inordinate amount of bets on those particular pitches. So that's why it gets flagged. And Luis Ortiz, similar thing, his teammate. But 2, you know what I feel like? Beyond just like players having integrity, right? Because that's what we ultimately want. We don't want to call into question the integrity of the game. You know what would really help? Don't let people bet on balls and strikes. Like, we bet on everything. Like, maybe we need to pull back a little bit on the amount of things we can bet on. I'm not, if Emmanuel Clase is guilty of what is being alleged here, it's still on him, right? If he's giving out inside information or making money off balls and strikes that he's throwing, that's ridiculous. It's not the type of integrity we want in our professional sports. But also, we need
lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, mine starts here.
To really take an inward look. And look in the mirror at where we have gone with sports betting. Like, not only is there a commercial every 5 seconds, I mean, I'm sure after ESPN reported this today, they're like, bet five and, you know, win 150 if you win your first bet at FanDuel or DraftKings, whatever it is. But the types of things we're betting on, heads and tails at the Super Bowl, heads and tails for a regular game, balls or strikes. We have gone so far, not just with the availability of betting, but with what we're betting on. Guys, next teams, right? It's too much, and it leaves too much out there for people to potentially find loopholes, to be tempted, just to be tempted into doing wrong when they're out there on the field of play. That's my suggestion. Let's take away ball and strike betting. That's ridiculous.
That could absolutely be a solution. And that's where the tricky part of this is that I do think that there is a world in which gambling with sports can exist, but it needs to be in a healthy way. It just feels like it has become
sometimes bigger than the actual games that are going on, bigger than the actual events that are going on. And that's the part that is concerning. And these players, like you said, that temptation just is there. It's so accessible.
I think it'll innately be there even without these ridiculous betting structures, the balls and strikes and the player's next team and all these things. I think it'll still be out there. But it's even more out in your face when you
now,
like, because if I'm Emmanuel Clase and I see that, oh, we can bet on balls or strikes, that feels like it's almost too easy. That's one pitch. How are they going to flag it? How are they going to figure out that temptation is even heavier?
Now, all of this being said, the point that you made that I very much agree with is these are still individuals breaking these rules.
Sure.
I don't want to paint gambling with a paintbrush and say, oh,
these are not broad strokes.
1,000% bad because this, and this has happened. These are individual cases. It's concerning the frequency of these in such a short term. They are becoming more and more and more. Like we said, it feels like every single week now we have a new player involved.
Luis
in some
Ortiz,
sort of
Emmanuel Clase, yeah. Terry Rozier, Jontay Porter, Malik Beasley. I mean, that's in the past calendar year.
I think that these players, though, also need to understand you're not going to beat the system. Stop
They're
trying.
They're going to figure it out.
They're going to figure it out.
Of
so that's
course.
Why it's, you know, I think that there are a lot of people who gamble to a healthy extent. They gamble and they don't let it take over their lives and they don't do it. So that's why there needs to be a balance here. I don't want to villainize gambling as a whole. It's just these players have got to realize you're not going to beat it. So stop trying unless you have a translator.
Hour number three is on the way. That was a good one, Connor. There we go. Snuck that one in real quick. But hour number three is on the way, and we'll open it broing down on some NFL. I'm going to bring on Alan Bell from Driving Line on the other side right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, wherever you get your shows.